gosh, it's so high. There we go. That's better. Okay, let's see. Yeah, I think it's good. All right. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Allahumma salli wa sallim wa barak ala nabiyyina Muhammad wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in. Allahumma la sahla illa ma ja'altahu sahla. Wa anta tajalul hazna idha shi'ta sahla. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I was like, that was a rhetorical salams, by the way. And I'm happy that you guys responded to it. I was lost in my thinking. I was reading this. Look, it says, say no to mediocrity. I'm just trying to remember who gave me this. Hajj with AE 2024.
Probably Saadia.
I do want to say I think it was Saadia. I do think so.
It sounds like a Saadia gift.
Yeah, you know, it's got some thought behind it. Saadia, if you're online, is it? Is this yours, man? Phase 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, no, I know who gave me this. Yeah, I know who gave me this. All right. Okay. It's nice, though, isn't it? Right, folks. We are... yes. Right. Now, what's our plan today? So for the folks who's doing the first time? Right, okay. So I kind of basically said in class, right, that this is a commentary on a book of law, and the commentary itself is pretty straightforward and basic, but the commentary to it is more detailed, and I give the commentary to the commentary, and we discuss all the fiqh and everything about it. Anyway, I kind of said that we're not going to go into too much detail explaining it, but it is what it is, and it's every week, and you're in the middle of Jummah. So let me describe to you now, or let me read to you what the section is that we are covering and that we're going to discuss. So let's give a quick shout out to all the people online, first of all, because these are my peoples. Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Maysa and Amina and Shazad Salim for getting the time wrong as always, and Ibrahim and Naeem and Hajra and other Hajra and Suraya Baji. Suraya Baji's best mate is by here, by the way. Are you her favorite niece? Hello? Hello, wake up. Are you her favorite niece?
Definitely my favorite niece.
Really? Suraya, is that true? Is that true, Suraya? Because I think we have a thingy imposter. Imposter here.
Suraya Baji is really missing us, man.
Suraya Baji, she tells us she misses us, but we don't see any of the missing.
She's been messaging.
Okay, then she has been messaging, mashallah. Okay, khalas. So that's that, and Umar Ismail, and nice Christmas to all of you, and Ameen to your dua, and Walaikum Salam to Marina, and to Widad, and to Farida, and to Iram, and to Sid, and Anam, and Tafida, and Yunus, and Shams is online, Yara.
Allah, he said the time allowed him to.
Presidential Suite 2022. Allah, look at that. And Muhammad Ali, and Doc, Zulfiqar, and Oasis in two places. And the audio is great. And Shahriyar is there as well. SubhanAllah, Shahriyar is on the drive. No, I was about to say that. Oh, he must be sitting next to Fizza, must be. Please, Shahriyar, tell me that you're not one of those weird dynamics here, anyway. There's two husband and wife on two different computers in two separate rooms. I don't like that behavior. And Shaz is watching from her room, by the way. She's just said, I'm watching from my room. Sit, guy. Right. And to my despair, Lamisa, Suraya has actually said 100% you are her favorite. Which is crazy, but very non-important considering you're the only one. I mean, let's be honest. It's not very... No, it's not a relative. She wishes. She wishes.
Relative and distance.
Exactly, relative distance. All right, here's the... Fizz has defended herself and said, we like to make our own comments, so they're going to be used separate computers. Sit, guy. Right. The text that we're going to be doing today in the Arabic, and obviously if you're on the app or on the portal, you'd see all this. Yep. The text that we're going to be covering today is وَيُسَنُّ أَنْ يَغْتَسِلَ وَتَقَدَّمَ وَيَتَنَظَّفَ وَيَتَطَيَّبَ. I don't think that we're going to get to the طيب, but we will certainly be covering the غسل. So in English, the translation is that it is the sunnah to take a bath, as explained previously, and to cleanse and perfume oneself. So I repeat today's text about the Friday prayer in the chapter of the Friday prayer. It is the sunnah to take a bath, as explained previously, and to cleanse and to perfume oneself. Now, this is a famous issue in fiqh. Why is it famous? Excellent, Awais, excellent. The hadith indicates as clear as the sun that this issue is an obligation. The hadith we're going to cover today, as you're going to see, indicates obligation. You'd think this is cut and dry and job done, next subject, and then all of the scholars turn around, all four imams, and they said that this ghusl is sunnah only. So you know that there's going to be some controversy, you know there's going to be some action. So it's a very interesting point. Why is that? How is that possible? We're going to go into it deep. This one needs some detail. So Sheikh Uthaymeen, alayhi rahmatullah, that's the commentary that we use. He goes, all right, let's start at the top. The text is وَيُسَنُّ أَنْ يَغْتَسِلَ. It is a sunnah to do ghusl. And he goes that the fuqaha, the jurists, that when they use the word yusan means that it is a recommendation, or it is preferred, or it is a sunnah. They can use different phrases to indicate the legal status of something. So they can say yusannu, or they can say wayajibu, or they can say wayushra'u. That would translate wayusannu means that it has been made sunnah, and وَيَجِبُ, it has been made obligatory, وَيُشْرَعُ, it has been legislated. Okay, these are three different legal kind of values or terms. So, Sheikh says, if they said yushra, if the phrase that was used was yushra, legislated, فَهُوَ لَفْظٌ صَالِحٌ لِلْوُجُوبِ وَالِاسْتِحْبَابِ. He goes that this word is a general phrase. So let me put it to you. If I said it is legislated, let's speak English law, right? If I said, is it legislated? Does it indicate what does it indicate legally? In terms of the command?
Can be done.
From it being sunnah and it being obligatory. Sorry?
Obligatory.
Anyone else?
Surely the fact that it's not said in such an obligatory way means you put it down as
sunnah. Okay, so husband and wife difference immediately. Wife said obligatory, husband says sunnah. Sounds like you're taking out the bins. Okay, that's fine. That was a high level joke, that was. Over the heads of everybody. Anyway, never mind. Wasted, custom I'm wasted. Wallah, I'm wasted in the public. I don't care what time it is. Don't you dare look at the clock and try to say it's late. That was a fantastic joke. Anyway, that was almost as good as 50 pence and Jay Z. Anyway, come on. Is that it? Where's my online people, man? My goodness, I'm being let down by the people here. The husband and wife, you have both let me down. Already disagreeing with one another. Yeah, thank you, Shahriyar. See, he's putting some speck on my name. Right, come on, anybody? There's obviously one more answer, isn't it?
It's just permissible.
Neither.
That was one of the possible answers. What? But it would be a silly answer, though, wouldn't it? Must have the same thing, right? Hanifa got it right. It means both, either. Think about it. Legislated from a linguistic point of view is that it's basically said, it's legal to do it, right? Okay, it's legal to do it, but how legal should it be? Is it obligatory to do? Is it sunnah to do? And that's why Sheikh Uthaymeen says, that it is a lafdhun salihun lil wujub wal istihbab. It is a word which sets itself up to either be indicating something which is sunnah or indicating something is wajib. And then he goes, yajibu fahuwa lil wujub. If you say yajib, obligatory, then of course it means it was made obligatory, then it means that this is obligated. وَإِذَا قَالُوا يُسَنُّ فَهُوَ لِلِاسْتِحْبَابِ. And if it says, and it was made sunnah, then this would mean that the act is recommended. Okay? So that's, I think, an important point. Legislated is a very, it's a very neat word, it's a very technical word, and it's a very vague word as well. And it's often used, you know, sometimes to indicate that something's permissible, or is indicating you know, a specific legal position. But that's why, and it's important to know legislated means either. وَالسُنَّ فِي تَعْبِرِ الْفُقَهَاءِ. What does sunnah mean? What does istihbab mean? What is it technically? What's the consequences?
It's a person is rewarded if they do the act.
Correct.
They're not punished for leaving.
Correct. هِيَ مَا أُثِيبَ فَاعِلُهُ. That the one who does the act is rewarded. وَلَمْ يُعَاقِبَ تَارِكُهُ. But the one who leaves it off is not punished. That's the definition of a sunnah, and therefore it lands between two which legal commands? Or two legal states?
Mubah and
wajib. Permissible and obligatory. So Sheikh says that the fact that he said that it is sunnah, then that means that if a person does ghusl on the day of Jum'ah, then that is good. But if he didn't do it, then he is not to be punished. Sheikh says he didn't mention how to do this ghusl, right? So the author just said, you know, that it is sunnah to do ghusl on Jum'ah. So he goes that when a person says ghusl and doesn't go into details, so he leaves ghusl general, just leaves it open, so you do ghusl, then this basically would indicate what we call the Islamic ghusl. يعني it is al-ightisal al-shar'i. It is al-ightisal al-shar'i. It is the Sharia ghusl. Okay? It doesn't mean ghusl. Okay? Ghusl and ghusl. Ghusl means to wash. Ghusl is the what is the washing. Now, yes, but what I want to say is that عندما we will say أنت تغسل or أنت غسلت, we will say you've washed, but that means like the clothes, or I washed my hand, right? When you wash your hand, then it just means that, you know, you put water over it. You might have used soap. The phrase is swingy. But when you say you did ghusl, we are meaning that this is a legal ghusl, an Islamic ghusl. But if you just say the word ghusl, it could mean, you know, just wash. Right? We don't mean just to wash. We mean the Islamic ghusl, which therefore means that... So I want you to remember, when you're using it in a very literal linguistic sense, when you say wash, that could be 17 times. That could be with bucket loads of water. That could be with lots of conditioner and so on. This could be with the intention to get rid of a smell, to get rid of a stain. All of that would be under wash, correct? Yeah. But we said before, I think we actually mentioned in this class, in this trip, and of course from the class everyone will know, that ghusl is a legal thing. And ghusl, I said, what did I say in the coach? I said something and I described it. It's a spiritual cleansing. It is lifting a spiritual state of hadith. It is not getting rid of a smell. It is not getting rid of a stink. Oh yeah, we were talking about the mud and the amdad. Yeah, I was talking about that. That the prophetic measure of the mud, one of these is for wudu, and four of these is ghusl. And there's nobody, if they're sweaty and smelly and whatever, that can get rid of a smell with four of these. You get my point? So this is purely ablution. This is purely a spiritual cleansing. It is the rubbing of the body with water, essentially. And if you were saying, I'm rubbing my body with water, that is not the same as washing yourself. Get my point? That's not cleaning yourself. And we have to get rid of the idea that And this will help a lot of people instantly move from using lots of water to using little water. The second you make them understand that ghusl and wudu is not about cleaning yourself, it is spiritual cleansing yourself. Because with this much water, you can't clean any kind of stain on your hand or oil or ketchup or soap. Or, you know what I'm saying? It's just too little. And so when it basically comes that you are, it's an act of obedience, and it's a process that you're thinking about, and it's an intention. I'm getting myself ready. I'm getting myself into the zone. And when you see the Prophet's descriptions of it, of wudu, it's all about sins dropping off and a person entering into a state, and the sins dropping off with the drop of blood, that there's a rubbing that's going on, that the state that a person gets into with wudu, everything is clearly from a otherworldly perspective, right? And so mentally, I want you to always remember that this is the concept. And likewise, ghusl itself is a washing to be done for the sake of a spiritual benefit. Yeah.
Is it okay to do both?
Absolutely, it's okay. Absolutely, it's okay to have the intention to get a ghusl done and clean yourself because you've got X, Y, and Z. However, the way that you are going to do it needs to be then, you've got to stay focused. This is why we said that when it comes to a ghusl, right, you got two types of ghusl. You got an obligatory one or you got a recommended one. Obligatory one meaning after marital relations, after hayd, after X, Y, whatever. Yeah, those have to be done. Everything else is recommended, like entering Mecca, as I explained the other day, for Umrah, for example, and what the author and the four imams say, Jum'ah, recommended. When it comes to the either one, if you're a person who showers every day, okay, it becomes not a dangerous situation, but you've got to be focused. Because if you're regularly going into the shower and subconsciously having a shower, or like every day, every evening having a shower, and now it's the time that you're coming out of your menses, for example, right? You've got to be clear that this is not my nightly shower. Your nightly shower is if you're having a shower first thing in the morning and you've had marital relations, there's no difference between the two. You're going in, you're washing, and you're using shower gel and using X, Y, Z. You got to be clear that I'm not just having my wake me up shower, I'm having my go to work shower, I'm having a shower to remove the state of janaba. I've got to be locked in and I have to have that intention ready. Otherwise, you haven't. If a person goes into the bathroom without thinking, had marital relations and goes in the morning because that's what they do, they are in a state of janaba. Because the water itself doesn't get rid of the janaba. It is that, Ya Allah, I want to lift the state of janaba, which is a spiritual state. Again, marital relations doesn't make anybody dirty. Doesn't make anybody dirty. Doesn't make the woman dirty. Doesn't make the man dirty. Yeah? It is a spiritual lifting of a state. It's a change of mood about, now you are in a state of enjoyment and X and Y and Z. Now we need to get into serious mode of life and ibadah and need to pray salah. We need to remove the spiritual state of hadith and now moving. And so the intention is very important. So yes, it can be soaps, this, that, blah, blah, blah. So it doesn't need to be split up, but that's the common sense. The common sense is to go in and have your shower like normal, use all your soaps, X, Y, Z, blah, blah, blah. And I always said that myself, and this could be, this is certainly not a religious fatwa or anything like that, but I've always said that when a person's going to go around and, the crazy amount of water that we use for those cleaning showers and wake-me-up showers and the like, the Islamic shower should at least look like an Islamic shower. And that meaning like a little bit of water and, the starting from the top and washing the right, washing the left and having wudu in it. If your body's wet already because you're in the shower, the amount of water you're going to use is going to be tiny, right? Relatively speaking. Kind of almost in a fake kind of way makes you feel like, I did something nice and good properly. And the splitting of it kind of helps as well. So I have my normal shower. I'm there in the shower now. Now I make my intention that this is now the janab. So I just let the water now pour over me, and I'm already rubbing on a clean part of skin because I just did the shower gel and all the rest of it. And likewise, that's how normally the majority of people will be doing this.
Surely the easiest way to work out the intention is, well, what was the purpose behind the shower? So if someone goes up, listen, I only got like half an hour left for a certain prayer, I need to quickly have a shower, they're going in with that intention, so they're not worried too much.
I don't know about that. I don't think that's the case. What if you are, as I said, a matter of routine, marital relations in the nighttime, and you wake up first thing in the morning? That's the only, you know, many people, the first thing they do, they don't make wudu. They shower every single day. And it's interesting what Ijlan said. He said, I stopped showering every single day after listening to AE. Yeah? And I remember that we spoke about this. We were in a, I think we were somewhere, I can't remember. And I said that, you know, you've got to be careful. Those people who shower every single day, you've got to be careful. People get a bit too comfortable when they're showering, and they lose the power of being able to control their intention and focus. It's a risky situation, right? Now, obviously, it doesn't need you to stop showering every day, but we need to be aware that the intention, people have got to stop being lazy. People have got to stop being lazy. And I'll tell you something. This is a human problem. All humans are lazy with intention, which is why humans across the planet, Muslims, I can say, and humans generally, but Muslims especially, have always, for a year and a day, have been verbalizing intention. They've always been creating a verbal statement, even though the Prophet ﷺ never had verbal statements. You know what I'm saying? Even Labbaik Allahumma Umrah, which we all said, you'll be pressed to find any statement from the Prophet ﷺ that would indicate a verbal Umrah, a verbal niyyah to indicate Umrah or even Hajj. And if you think about it, it makes sense. Like, what else would you be doing in this country with these two sheets on, going to Mecca? You could pay me £1 billion, yani, you know, I wouldn't be doing that behavior in a norm. But you've come here for a reason with an indication, whatever, and that's how it works. That's how the intention works. But the truth is that people don't have confidence in their intention. And I've always said that the people who are at the top of the tree are those that master their intention. They make all of their permissible acts were acts of worship. They make all of their interactions with another human being, every single act with another human being, an act of worship, right? And those are the people who are at the top. They are in a 24/7 state of worship. They're using their sleep, they're using their eating, they're using, you know, like, you think about the most random things, going into a lift, moving around, you know, they're always thinking. How can I turn this normal act of courtesy? How can I use the space that I've got? How can I use the energy that I have? How can I use the extra water that I've got? Every single thing, they will, you know, turn it into some kind of act of worship just by their intention, right? And the reason they're at the top is because the vast majority, and alone at the top, is because the vast majority can't do that. Because to control intention and to master it and to have it ready, you know, at will, is tough. Which is why the masses, the other 99.9% of people, live a very simple life where they memorize the intention, they stand there for dhuhr, and they're doubting themselves that they're actually standing for dhuhr. What if I'm thinking something else? And so they actually say, I'm standing here about to pray 4 rak'ah of fard prayer, of dhuhr, behind this imam, standing, you know, facing the qibla, Allahu Akbar. In every single language, of every single culture, everyone has it. Crazy. Crazy if you think about it. But it is, the people need it. And it's not a major thing. It's not a major thing. But anyway, Ghufran said, does it make sense to do the ghusl first without the shower gel, etc., then shower? Doing that way around is okay, right? Yes, 100%. 100%. 100%. Yeah? Teenage boy, oh, no, if we tell him skip it, they know. The stinkers, yani, can carry on washing every day. It's all right. Can women make wudu during their menses with the intention they want to be in a state of protection? Yes, I do believe that, Ruham. I believe that a wudu, just like the Prophet ﷺ used to do, After marital relations, he would make wudu and istinja. Okay, istinja and wudu This is what we call takhfif, yani it just reduce, lightens the state of impurity, right? Like, okay, I can't get rid of it right now, the whole state of impurity, the spiritual state of impurity, but at least I can go to sleep with some kind of, yani, pseudo-purity. Pseudo, and it is a pseudo sense of purity, but it's better than being completely, fully impure. And so I think qiyas upon the janaba, I think for menses, for someone who has menses, if she makes wudu, I think it's good. It doesn't give her any legal anything, by the way, that is changed, that allows her to pray or fast or whatever. She can read Quran. Obviously, that's the difference between the one who's in janaba, that they cannot read Quran. But yani, making wudu gives a little bit of a more Islamic feel to this kind of, you know, state of restricted ibadah state. So this is very vague, there's no doubt about it, but it's legislated because of the action of the Prophet ﷺ. Yeah.
So why is it that we say the intention out loud then? Is it because the condition was, like somebody asked, one of the companions, they asked,
you know something? Your known is truth. I have not yet got down to the crux of exactly how it developed so strongly. What I absolutely know is that I have never seen the Prophet ﷺ say it. But I will want to do a detailed bahth and research into where the verbal niyyah for Hajj and Umrah really comes from and who's really sending it. What I do know is that the vast majority of scholars are very comfortable with it. And that just goes to show that, you know, there's more to Islam than we think. It's not just where's the hadith, where's the evidence, where's the X, where's the Y. And today is a good example. The hadith, as we're going to see now, let's actually get to it, otherwise Mason will say what the hell's going on. Okay. So he didn't say how we do it. So when you hear the word ghusl, then this means the legal Islamic ghusl. Doesn't mean just washing up the body. It means the shar'i ghusl, which has two specific characteristics. Lahu sifatan. The first one is the obligatory characteristics, or the obligatory aspects, I should say. Wa hiya an ya'amma jami'a badnihi bil ma'. Number one, that he completely wetens his entire body. وَلَوْ بِإِنْغِمَاسٍ أَوْ بِبَرْكَةٍ أَوْ نَهْرٍ أَوْ بَحْرٍ. Regardless of whether he pours a bucket over himself, or whether he dunks himself into a pool or into a well, or stands under a shower, it doesn't matter how it happened. He can jump into a lake, he can jump into the ocean, but he's got to physically wet his entire body. Even if you're using a spray, you're using a cup, or jumping into the sea or into the swimming pool, right? Your first characteristic, which is obligatory, is to, obviously that has to be the intention for ghusl, that goes without yani saying, but the first and the obligatory aspect of the ghusl is that the whole body is covered, is wettened. And then the recommended aspect, which is the second aspect of ghusl, is that you first do wudu, first. Not just make wudu, but you first do wudu. وَهِيَ أَنْ يَتَوَضَّأَ أَوَّلًا كَمَا يَتَوَضَّأُ لِلصَّلَاةِ. Alright, so he would make the wudu of salah, like the normal wudu, and then he pours water over his head, and he will yani, make sure that all of the hair, whether it's beard, whether it's on the head, is all dissed. What is this? Rubbed. Not rubbed. Tussled. Finger, what is that?
They have it in the shampoo bottle directions.
What is it called?
They say rub.
I think it says rub, by the way. I think on a shampoo bottle, it says rub. And nobody rubs, by the way. Has anyone ever rubbed?
No,
massaging? Yeah. No, scrubbing can't be. Can't be scrubbed. Massaging, I think. It's not scrubbed, bro. How can it be scrubbed?
Scrubbing.
Yeah, it's not scrubbed. It's, I think, massaging. But also massaging is not correct either, isn't it? Because you can massage like... So, worked into... Oof. Sort of came with the lines there. Worked into. Work it in. Yep, I like wiping too. No, no, lather, no. Lather is the opposite, man. Lather, you just need to rub it a bit like that. Anyway, running the fingers through. So, Sheikh Uthaymeen says you run the fingers through the hair, so to make sure it gets to the roots, okay? It gets to all the kind of the parts. You do that three times, and then you put it over the rest of the entire body, all right? Sheikh says, the author told us that it is sunnah to do the ghusl, didn't tell us how. Now I've explained that. He didn't tell us when. Let me explain that, he said. He goes, some of the scholars said that it is the end of the night, that the beginning time for the Jum'ah ghusl is the end of the night. And others said that it is from the start time of Fajr, because the day doesn't start until Fajr starts, the start time, break of dawn. Others said that it is from sunrise, min tulu' al-shams, that it is from start time, from sunrise, because ma bayna al-fajr wa tulu' al-shams waqtun lis-salat khassa wa hiya al-fajr wa la yantahi waqtuha illa bi tulu' al-shams. And the reason they said that it's got to start at sunrise, it goes, is because if you start at Fajr, well, Fajr is the start time of the Fajr prayer, and the Fajr prayer continues until sunrise, and so this time zone, time period, is specifically for Salatul Fajr. So how are we trying to blag Jum'ah into it? You get what I'm saying? No? So Friday is the Friday day. Yeah, we agree that Fajr time is the start of Friday. We agree with that. But if we were to say that the Friday ghusl starts at the start time for Fajr, well, actually, that is the time for Fajr prayer, whereas we want to do a ghusl for the Jum'ah prayer, which is going to be the next question that's going to come in a minute. What is the actual ghusl for?
Doesn't the Fajr start at the Maghrib?
Not Fajr doesn't start. Well, that would be a nice idea for Fajr to start at Maghrib.
No, I think he means Islamic.
No, no, forget what he says. Okay, no, we're no, going to hold him accountable, right?
Oh,
he
sorry,
said,
no,
no, no, no, no, no, no, no, no, no. And she's defending you as well, by the way.
That's what I
never talking to Jamal. Fajr starts at Maghrib, sick guy. Legend, sick guy, why not? So, but that is the reason, yeah. Because the day starts at night, and therefore Maghrib would be the official start time technically of Friday. Friday night is what comes before the day. And so that's one of the opinions, that you can do the ghusl. That's the same for the recitation of Surat al-Kahf as well. People say, you know, can I start on the Thursday night? The same for the Friday washing. Can I start on a Thursday night? Because technically that's Friday. So that's the first opinion. The second is from the Fajr start time. And the third is the sunrise. What do you think is a good answer here?
I just have a question.
Yeah, but before the question, what do you think is a good answer?
There's a legal and there's a recommended. So
that could be approach, but what else could be a just good answer? Using the concepts of good answers. I don't want to give the word away.
All are legislated?
Yeah.
They're all, well, not necessarily, but...
After sunrise.
Why? Well done. That's exactly the correct answer. The safe, I didn't want to say the word safe. If I had said safe, I said safe, all of you would have said after sunrise. So I said, what would be a good solution here, which would be encompassing the concept of safety? Obviously, it makes sense to do it after sunrise, because you'd be following then the night one, you'd get the Fajr one, you'd get the, you know what I'm saying? If you, what would be the riskiest one? Earliest, the nighttime one. Because then you're not in that scholar's one. But if you do it in the sunrise, well, the first scholar at least agrees that it's a valid one, and the second scholar agrees at least it's a valid one, and the third scholar also agrees that it's a valid one. And that's what Sheikh says. وَعَلَى هَذَا فَيَكُونَ ابْتِدَاءُ الْإِخْتِسَالِ مِنْ تُلُوعِ الشَّمْسِ وَهَذَا أَحْوَةُ الْأَقْوَالَ الثَّالِثَةِ. This is the safest and the most encompassing of the three opinions. If he does that, then that's obviously something which is good. And he said the end times, that's the beginning time. What's the end time? The end time is as-sa'i al-jum'ah al-aqwali kulliha. All of these positions, they said that the going to the jum'ah, meaning the actual time for the jum'ah start time, is the one. Sheikh says, he said that, he's really breaking him apart here. He goes, he said that it's sunnah to make ightisal, but he didn't say who. So who should be doing this ghusl? Should it be men or should it be women? And Sheikh says that the sunnah would indicate what? Excellent. Anyone who's going to the Jummah, man or woman, okay? That the sunnah tadullu ala anna al-iqtisal khassun biman ya'ti ila al-jum'ah. And that this is because of the statement of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, إِذَا جَاءَ أَحَدُكُمُ الْجُمْعَةَ فَلْيَغْتَسِلْ. That if any one of you goes to the Jum'ah, then let him take a ghusl. Let him do a ghusl. فَلْيَغْتَسِلْ. And this hadith is the Killa hadith, narrated by Bukhari, right? Narrated by Bukhari in the book of Jum'ah, in the chapter of the excellence of Jum'ah, hadith number 882, also narrated by Muslim, and this is the hadith of Umar. Interesting this, by the way, okay? Because Umar radiallahu anh doesn't narrate many hadith, and it's also interesting because Umar is a key player in the discussion of the whole concept of ghusl and Jum'ah, okay? Which we're gonna come to. And also we have another evidence. So the key part of this hadith was whoever comes to Jum'ah, yeah? Whoever goes to Jum'ah, rather, then let him take the ghusl. Then we have another hadith, غسل الجمعة واجب على كل محتلم. This is the other killer hadith, that Friday bath or the Friday ghusl is obligatory upon every adult محتلم, the one who gets wet dreams, yeah, the one who has gone post-pubescent, meaning adult, yeah. And this hadith is also narrated by Imam al-Bukhari, also in the book of Jum'ah, also in the chapter, in the chapter of the ghusl on the day of Jum'ah. Hadith number 879, and it's also narrated by Sahih, it's also narrated in Sahih Muslim as well. Sheikh says, if you look at these two hadith, the word Jum'ah is used, and هنا يحتمل أن يكون المراد بها الصلاة أو اليوم. He goes, true, the word says Jum'ah, whoever comes to Jum'ah, whoever goes to Jum'ah. Now, it is true that the word is being used in an open general sense, and so therefore it could mean both the prayer and it could mean the day. That's the question we need to answer. Does it mean the day, and does it mean the prayer, does it mean the day? I'm pretty sure I discussed this a couple of weeks ago, because we were talking about COVID, remember? I think it was in the lesson from Pakistan. I get the feeling it was from Pakistan. But I was saying that in COVID, people were not needing to do the ghusl on Friday because people were not praying or going and meeting people on the in the masjids, right? And the dhuhr was being offered. Now, if you believe that the ghusl was for the Friday itself, which I don't believe and I don't think the majority believe at all, then you'd shower for the day itself. And obviously there's some sense in that. The day is the best day of the week. It's a fantastic day and day of barakah and day of everything. So generally when something is barakah and excellent and great, then ghusl is something which is great as well. Or wudu, or that, you know, physical preparation, etc. But no, we believe that it is for the prayer itself. Because إِذَا أَتَى أَحْدُكُمُ الْجُمْعَةَ يُعَيِّنَ أَوْ يُعَيِّنُ أَنَّ الْمُرَادَ بِهَا الصَّلَاةَ. It's clear, the first hadith, whoever comes to the Jum'ah, that can't mean to whoever comes to the day. It means to the prayer, doesn't it? Yeah? The translation's got to be to the prayer. وَعَلَى هَذَا, so then based upon this, فَالنِّسَاءَ لَا يُسَنُّ لَهُنَّ الْإِغْتِسَالِ. Therefore, it is not a sunnah for women to do ghusl on Friday, just because they're at home and it's Friday. Only if they attend the prayer, then they would do it. Likewise, someone who is a male, who's not praying Jum'ah, he's at home, he's ill, disabled, sick, XYZ, he also doesn't make a ghusl because it's not for the Friday, it's for the attending of the prayer. Okay? Sheikh then says, as for the author, back to his statement again, that it is a sunnah to do ghusl, this is the position of the Hanbali Madhab, Sheikh Uthaymeen says, and it is the position of the majority of scholars. Actually, not only is it the position of the majority of scholars, Ibn Abd al-Barr said that there's a consensus on this point, that it is a sunnah. And actually, technically, he's kind of right. From the classical scholars, we don't know, meaning the fuqaha, there's no difference of opinion on this point. They all said that it is sunnah. But we'll come to that in a second. Yes, sorry?
Even the Zahiri
madhab? But that they wouldn't be considered as part of the fuqaha. But that's what we're coming to now. وَذَهَبَ بَعْضُ أَهْلِ الْعِلْمِ إِلَىٰ أَنَّ الْإِغْتِسَالُ وَاجِبٌ. But some of the scholars, some of the people of knowledge, they took the position that ghusl is wajib. So despite the fact that the vast majority of scholars said sunnah, some said it's wajib. Who are these some? It is Ibn Hazm, who is the Imam of the Zahiriyya. Okay, he said that it is absolutely obligatory. And and Ibn Taymiyyah also, he had an opinion. But he had a nuanced opinion, which I like a lot. He said, and Sheikh Uthaymeen, by the way, he also holds it to be obligatory. Our author here, our commentator here. And we'll... completely, regardless of what happens. And then Ibn Taymiyyah had like a balanced position. I mean, that's a biased phrase. But he has a nuanced position, I should say. Ibn Taymiyyah's opinion was that it is obligatory upon anyone who is sweating or has a smell because of work, etc., etc. Someone's got to make an assessment of their bodily state and work and clothes, coming from work, coming from distance. And we have some interesting evidences to discuss this. Okay? So let's jump in. Are we waiting for time? Yeah, we've got good time. All right. So let's jump in. So he says, so Sheikh says that this is the correct opinion, that it is obligatory, not Ibn Taymiyyah's one, the Ibn Hazm one, and the Zahiri, the literalist opinion. Yep.
I thought you said that ghusl wasn't
But we're going to come to that as well. Okay, that's a good point. Maimuna said that, but before we're saying that the ghusl is not something which is for physical cleanliness anyway. So how can that happen? So let's now look at all of the evidences. Sheikh Uthaymeen says, now he's defending his position, and forcefully. He goes, the first evidence is the statement of the most eloquent of all of creation. You know, when he starts getting into that area, you know that the game is like, you know what I mean? Huh? And the most sincere of them, and the most advising of them, and that's Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wasallam. And he said, غُسْلُ الْجُمُعَةِ وَاجِبٌ عَلَىٰ كُلِّ مُحْتَلِمٍ, that the Friday bath is obligatory upon every adult. And the hadith narrated by Bukhari, as we said. The Prophet ﷺ made it abundantly clear that this is obligatory. And it is well known that when we read قرأنا هذه العبارة في مؤلف كهذا الذي بين أيدينا لم نفهم إلمن, he goes that if we were to read this anywhere, at any time, at any moment, this kind of statement, there's no other way to understand it except that it's obligatory. He's got a point, right? You read a hadith that says that, then how can you understand it in any other way? He goes, when you hear this hadith, the Friday bath is obligatory upon every adult, you understand that the one who doesn't do it is going to be punished. That's what he says. He's going to be sinning. فَكَيْفَ وَالتَّعْبِيرُ مِنْ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ صَلَّى اللَّهِ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ. He goes, how? How are people taking this down to sunnah? How are they degrading it to sunnah? No, degrading, downgrading. Not degrading. Downgrading it to sunnah when it's so clear, right? And he's the most knowledgeable of the creation when it comes to the sharia of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and he's the most eloquent of the creation, and he's the most sincere of them, and he's always giving them, and he's the most knowledgeable of what he says himself. Okay? And then Sheikh says, not only that, he made the obligation linked to something which would obligate that situation as well. وَهُوَ الْإِحْتِلَامُ الَّذِي يَحْصُلْ بِهِ الْبُلُوغُ فَيَتَعَمَّلْنَا ذَلِكَ تَبَيِّنَ لَنَا ظَاهِرًا أَنَّ غُسْلُ الْجُمْعَةِ وَاجِبُ وَأَنَّ مَنْ تَرَكَ فَهُوَ آثِمُ. Okay, لَكِنْ تَصِحُّ الصَّلَاةُ بِدُونِهِ لَأَنُّ لَيْسَ عَلَىٰ جَنَابَةٍ. This is interesting what he says. He goes that if you look at the way that he described it, saying adult, and he used the word al-ihtilam, those who has wet dreams, is indicating something that's got to be done, right? He's not saying that that's the reason, but he's saying that it's got to be done. So keep it to adult. Anyway, he's saying it's obligatory, and that's what the statement says. And that the one who doesn't do it, then he is to be punished, that he is sinful, not to be punished, he is sinful. However, the prayer is valid without it. And that's important. This goes back to a very important principle that we know in Sharia, that there's a difference between doing something and sinning and it invalidating the act. Two are separate things. Okay? So the prayer itself is valid. Why? Because he's not needing to do ghusl for janabah. So the prayer can go ahead, right? The prayer can go ahead. He's in a state of wudu. He didn't have to do ghusl. The prayer is valid with wudu. Doesn't need ghusl. It's the janabah that the prayer needs ghusl from. Not from Friday. But he's just going to be sinful. That's according to Sheikh Al-Uthaymeen alayhi rahmatullah. So that's his first evidence, this hadith. The second evidence is this, that Uthman radiallahu an, he came in, and this hadith has been narrated in multiple versions. In some of them, we don't know who this person is. It was a man who came in, but we know that it is Uthman, okay? And so Umar was giving the khutbah, radiallahu an, and he was on the minbar. Imagine this scenario. Uthman radiallahu anhu walks in. Did I not mention this in Medina? Why was I thinking about this? Anyway, I'm sure I did. You know why I did? Because I was asked a question about the first adhan of Jum'ah being so early and why that would happen. And I said people would come in from far away. And I gave the example of Uthman and then.
This one?
Voice note?
Was it a voice note?
I don't know about that. I don't know.
I think you got it in the previous one.
Maybe. Anyway, so Umar radiallahu anhu is giving the khutbah. He's on the minbar. Uthman radiallahu an walks in late. Late is yani coming in when the khutbah is going on. That's not good. You should be here well before the khutbah. And how many ahadith are emphasizing that you come early? So he's already now come while the khutbah has started. And Uthman said, Wallahi, O leader of the believers, Ya Amir Mu'mineen, I was busy. I was hooked up. Kuntu fi shughlin. I was hooked up. And literally I had no time, just made wudu and I've just come. Just literally, just straight there, made wudu and I just come. And Umar is like, huh? No wudu either? Wudu only as well? Meaning no ghusl? Meaning you come late and yani you didn't do ghusl? Like, you know, cussing him basically. Right? Ya'ani, Sheikh Uthaymeen now puts the brackets to try to indicate, i.e. Umar is saying, what, you mean on top of that you did wudu only? Right? That's what he's put in brackets, yeah? وَقَدْ عَلِمْتَ أَنَّ النَّبِيَّ صَلَى اللَّهِ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمْ كَانِ يَأْمُرُ بِالْغُسْلِ. Therefore you learn, okay, And he said, and you know that the Prophet ﷺ used to command to ghusl. Used to order the ghusl. So Umar radiallahu an has criticized him for just doing wudu. Okay?
This is outside of the khutbah, right?
This is in the khutbah.
So it's like a conversation happening?
It's a conversation inside happening the inside the khutbah.
Umar must have started it.
And this is actually the people who said this is obligatory. This is their main evidence. They said it's not allowed to interrupt that which is obligatory, except for something that must be obligatory. For him to interrupt his khutbah to call this out must mean it's very serious. And with our greatest respects, we disagree. We think that it's permissible for the imam to have a conversation or to say anything or to ask someone or to get something, and it is not something that needs an obligatory break in the khutbah. That's the first point. And we'll also say that actually this hadith goes against these scholars. This hadith they're using as an evidence against us, actually we use it as an evidence against them. How? Not necessarily the point about breaking the obligatory, no. How is this evidence? Think laterally. or maybe think outside the box. We don't need to think outside the box. It's actually quite obvious. Why is this hadith the opposite? It's not an evidence to indicate ghusl is obligatory. Correct. Uthman stayed. Umar let him continue. Yeah. If it was obligatory, you know, he would have, you know, he wouldn't let him, Umar wouldn't have let Uthman done haram. Yeah. And Uthman would not have continued to do haram. Correct. That's a good counter. It's a potential counter argument. But the fact that Umar didn't tell him to go doesn't necessarily mean anything to the Jumu'ah prayer, because the Jumu'ah prayer is valid, which is why I added that point. You know that Umar would never let someone do haram in front of them, right? Which is a different story. Get my point? Meaning that you're right, that if it was going to invalidate the prayer, he'd have to force him to go and think it. But also, underneath that, forget invalidation now, Umar would also not let someone like Uthman do haram. Yeah, yeah. So, this is an evidence against, yani the claim. This hadith is narrated in Bukhari in the book of Jumu'ah, hadith number 878. Okay, this is, and by Muslim as well, hadith number 845. Hadith number 845. How's the lighting, Shaz? Because I can't see a single thing. Honestly, I can't see anything. Sheikh Uthaymeen then says, and he's already gone onto the front foot, and as for what they, meaning us, the majority, okay, what they would be using, that which has been narrated from the companion Samura ibn Jundub radiallahu an. When was the last time we used the name Samura ibn Jundub? Well done. In what context?
He was the person who...
No. No. What was his contribution to the whole?
Oh, he hadn't made a ghusl before.
No.
Oh, that was Hanzala.
Oh, yeah,
Hanzala.
No.
Huh? Yes, the fighting.
Correct, he was. He was one of the kids, yani, that got turned back at Uhud. And Rafi ibn Khadij was like, you know, and he got in because of his skills.
Rafi was the archer.
Correct, for archery, yes. And Samura, who was like 13, 14, 15, something like this, he said, how are you letting my guy in and I'll take him down? And he took him down, and then he was included in Uhud as well. So he has a hadith which is famous in this chapter. Radiallahu anhu, he said that the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, من توضع يوم الجمعة فبها ونعمت ومن اغتسل فلغسل أفضل. This hadith is tough to translate. Okay? The hadith is narrated by Imam Ahmad. Okay? Hadith number 5 in volume 7, so this is using the not using the numerical version, narrated by Abu Dawud as well, hadith number 354, narrated by Imam Tirmidhi as well, hadith number 497, narrated by Imam Nasa'i as well, hadith number 1380. Now, how are we going to translate this hadith? من توضع يوم الجمعة فبها ونعمت. Whoever makes wudu on the day of Jum'ah, whoever makes wudu on the day of Jum'ah, then good job. I have no idea how to translate. فبها ونعمت. نعمت يعني means
good and good.
Yeah. فبها, okay. فبها is, as you're going to see now, Sheikh Uthaymeen is going to like pull this statement up. Fabiha is like, how am I even going to translate this? Fabiha wa ni'mat. Let's do the second part first. Ni'mat means, that's good, that's fine, right? That's okay, it's all right. Fabiha is like a broken statement. It is Translated literally, biha means with it. With it. With what? Yani, you know? So it's almost like, as a conversation or as a sentence, it means whoever makes wudu on Day of Judgment, then yeah, all right.
Day of Jummah.
On Day of Jummah. I'm so tired.
That's my excuse too.
That's your excuse too, I know. The Day of Jummah, then yeah, okay, good job. Something like that. وَمَنْ اِغْتَسَلَ فَلَغُسْلُ أَفْضَلُ But whoever does ghusl, then the ghusl is better. Whoever does ghusl, then ghusl is better. Now obviously it's clear, everybody, we always want ghusl. It's always the best thing to do, no doubt about it. But the key point here is that wudu would be enough. And that's a big point being made here. Now, this is what Shaykh Uthaymeen says, and now you need to lock in, guys. If you weren't tired enough as it is, and this is so the wrong time to take on this subject. And I don't know whether even these guys online can handle this, yeah? But let's go, we'll start it, and no doubt we'll have to cover it again next week. فَهَذَا الْحَدِيثِ لَا يُقَاوِمُ مَا أَخْرَجَهُ الْأَئِمَّةِ السَّبْعَ وَغَيْرُهُمْ He goes, there's no chance you can compare this hadith to the hadith which has been narrated by the seven imams, right? And by that he means Bukhari and Muslim and Ahmed and the four authors of the Sunan, Abu Dawud, Ibn Majah, Tirmidhi, and Abu Dawud. And he goes, no way can this hadith stand up to the hadith of Abu Sa'id al-Khudri, the one that we just said in Bukhari, غُسْلُ الْجُمْعَةِ وَاجِبٌ عَلَىٰ كُلِّ مُحْتَلِمٍ That to take the bath on Friday is obligatory on every adult. You can't compare these two hadith. One is shining, king, Bukhari, Muslim, as authentic as it gets, and the other one didn't make it into Bukhari, didn't make it into Muslim, narrated by a few of the scholars, and that's just enough of it as a opening salvo.
So you're saying a shahad,
basically? Well, we'll see what he says in a second. Then he goes, ثُمَّ إِنَّ الْحَدِيثَ مِنْ حَيْثُ السَّنَدْ ضَيْفُ He goes, as from a chain point of view, I need to say this hadith is weak. This hadith is weak. لِأَنَّ كَثِيرًا مِنَ الْعُلَمَاءِ الْحَدِيثِ يَقُولُونَ And that's because so many, many of the scholars of hadith say, إِنَّهُ لَمْ يَصِحْ سَمَاءُ الْحَسَنِ عَنْ سَمُرَ إِلَّا فِي حَدِيثِ الْعَقِيقَةِ وَإِنْ كُنَّا رَجَّحْنَا فِي الْمُصْطَلَحِ أنه متى ثبت السماع الراوي من شيخه وكان الثقة ليس معروفا بالتدليس فإنه يحمل على السماع على أن الحسن رحمه الله رماه بعض العلماء بالتدليس This is one of the all-time great paragraphs where there's three U-turns and discussions and debate like it's like Sheikh Uthaymeen is debating with himself and it's all kicking off So let me translate literally this paragraph and then we'll have some fun and then maybe we'll call it He goes this hadith from a Sanad point of view. So forget about so the previous statement when he said you can't compare these two statements, he's talking about the text. He goes, look at this text that's saying sunnah and sorry that wudu is okay and that ghusl is just better. And look at this hadith that we've got, which is Bukhari, which is saying that it's obligatory. He goes, how are you going to compare these two texts? And now he goes, now let's look at the chain. He goes, this hadith has a problem in the chain. Because many scholars used to consider that Al-Hasan, when he would narrate from Samura, radiallahu anhu, the companion, right? It is known, it is not true, it is not correct to say that he actually heard from him. Remember a hadith, you got to hear from the other person. So he says it to you. So then when you're narrating the hadith, you will say, I heard so-and-so, or so-and-so said to me, whatever. So he's saying that Hassan never heard from Samura. Except in one hadith, which we know that he definitely heard from him. And that is in the hadith of the Aqiqah, which we'll come to. Okay, another time. So in the hadith of Aqiqah, yes, he did hear from him. But in the rest of the hadith, we don't know of him ever having heard from him. Then Sheikh Uthaymeen then puts in a brackets. Parenthesis. Yeah, a parenthesis. He's saying, however, it should be said that if someone is not known for the act of tadlis And he indicates that he was certain that he certainly heard from his teacher. Then this is something, and the narrator himself is trustworthy. وَكَانَ ثِقَى لَيْسَ مَعْرُوفٌ بِتَدْلِيسٍ. Then it is considered to be like as if he heard. So I'm just going to have to now give you a full explanation of what this bracket means. Okay, what does it even mean? What's tadlis?
It's when you don't know, say the name of the person because you think someone
X, Y, Z.
So therefore, you cover him up by using a kunya, Abu Hassan.
Correct. So let's say that I hear from Isa. Isa tells me that you know that Bilabin's Dubai chocolate is lame. Okay? Now, I know that Isa doesn't know the first thing about Dubai or chocolate. Or Bilabin. The only thing Isa knows about is sleeping. Okay? And my guy sleeps well. You know, on the first day, the cleaners were banging on the door like this. Then I said to the cleaner, get out the way. And graz, 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 graz. Bro, there wasn't even a beep. Nothing. My guy was in a different planet, bro. So, now I want to tell people, because I believe in what he said. He's right. The problem is that as soon as they hear that Isa said, they're going to say immediately, Isa, what does Isa do? He just sleeps. He does know nothing. So I say, so-and-so told me. Yeah? Or I mention a name. Or I even worse, I skip him out and I say, Yasmin told me. And actually, she never told me. It was Isa who told me. Right? So I'm using like another person higher up the chain. This is what we call, and these are varieties basically of what we call tadlis, where you are hiding one of the people in the chain for some kind of reason, for some purpose. Sometimes it's political, sometimes it's, but most of the time it's because, most of the time, let me just keep it simple. Most of the time, I am the expert here. Everyone else is ignorant in the field. I know that he's authentic. Their ignorance that they think that he's not authentic is just going to create too much noise. You know what I mean? Too much yani wasting time. So I'm just not going to bother using his name. And I'm just going to go with it. This is what we call tadlis. All right? And this is a real problem. This, when you do tadlis, this is an indication that the hadith is weak. Or not indication, meaning that this automatically makes the hadith weak because what you have done is introduce a break in the chain. And any chain that has a break, by definition, makes it a weak hadith. Sheikh Uthameen makes the point, he goes, however, not all people who do tadlis are the same. And especially when the person that's doing tadlis is yani someone not only who's trustworthy, but as an imam of the hadith, an imam in deen. And what about if the people who are doing tadlis is the levels of companions, for example, which has been narrated, by the way. And therefore, the claim is being put forward is that, is all tadlis all the same? Technically, it might be the same definition, but is it actually tadlis each time that happens? Right? You know what's crazy? That we're doing this on this day, tadlis, where everybody's asleep. That whole back row is knocked out. They're gone. They're like, what is happening here? They're like in a state of manga. And by the way, I'm teaching it and I feel like I'm floating as well. Yani, how are we doing tadlis with 2.5 hours sleep? And the whole day on the road, and all night in Umrah. I have no idea why we're doing tadlis right now. And these lot are all, again, it's stuffed full of turkey and cranberry, and all these Pakistan. I guarantee they all had halal turkey, 100%. Christmas, by the way, it's Christmas Day today.
Yeah.
And we did no celebration, nothing.
We did a Christmas Eve Umrah,
We did a Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Mass time Umrah. Yeah, you know what? You.
No, I'm just referring to the day.
Okay. I just want to say, I just do tadlis. I am proud of my tadlis when I miss out this guy every single day. Danish yani doesn't exist in our planet. That is it. All right? So, yeah. Now, Sheikh Uthaymeen says that in the science of hadith, it's known that if you are an imam and you are trustworthy, and here's the key. When a person does tadlis, because it's normally a scholar that does tadlis, the ignorant don't get involved in this. Ignorant have no game in this. Tadlis is only applied to scholars in the first place. When a scholar does tadlis, he himself is feeling bad about his tadlis. And so what did they always do? They do what's called an'ana. An'ana means that they kind of blag it.
They don't say, I heard.
Exactly. They don't say, I heard. They don't say, he said to me. They say, on the authority of. All right? So if I say, on the authority of Isa, what I'm kind of saying is that actually his mom told him. You know, I didn't need to hear from him. He didn't say it to me directly. So I'm not lying now. That's how the scholar gets away with it. You know what I mean? He kind of blagged it. He's kind of said that, I never said that he said to me. I never said, Sami'tu Isa yaqul. Yeah, or hadathani, these kind of very strong phrases. When you say qala, he said, or hadathani, he narrated to me, or sami'tu, I heard him say, in all language actually, and obviously, you know, it's interesting, this science, because this also applies in law. Anyone who studies law knows that. If anyone's ever seen the BBC, why they're different to the rest of the news organizations, you know, when it's all going off and at the moment, and now is a very interesting time right now. Like this subject is actually more important than people realize, because we are about to see a huge shift in the way that people consume their news. And they've now called it legacy media versus free media. And these are all yani bakwas. This is all Trump, Elon Musk. Obviously, Musk is playing a massive game and he's just getting ready to literally control the world. This guy is as flipping bonkers as it gets. And by completely bashing what he calls legacy media, who are... No doubt, there's some lies and there's some X and Y corruption that goes in there, but they are actually the last remaining bastion of journalism and actual kind of whatever. Whereas you've got this free kind of let everybody say whatever they want, and the people defending this new kind of way, age, whatever, realizing that the amount of fisk and the amount of lies that are being spread is crazy. The idea that you could compare going to Twitter for your news versus an organization like the BBC, for example, that trains its people on an'ana and sumi'tu and qala. And imagine a non-Muslim organization that doesn't care about these things, doesn't have a theological interest, I mean, that but has a professional interest in making sure that you are accurate the way that you report something. And you'll see BBC cussing itself when they get it wrong as well, all the time. It's actually really interesting. It's actually really interesting to see that this is, happening right now in front of our eyes. So anyway, the point is that, as Sheikh Uthaymeen says, that when a person that is considered to be doing tadlis actually says sami'tu, then that mudallis is not considered tadlis at all, because he went straight in with the phrase that, you know, and that's what we consider. Especially if he doesn't do tadlis a lot. And then that's the end of the close of brackets. And then Sheikh Uthaymeen closes it and goes, oh, by the way, but we do need to say that Al-Hassan did used to do tadlis quite a bit.
So is it really tadlis if he said sami'tu then?
So that, the argument would be, what Sheikh Uthaymeen is saying is that if a person doesn't do tadlis a lot, no problem. It's not tadlis. But then the idea is that if you do tadlis quite a bit, then it's a problem. Now, I will say that what Sheikh Uthaymeen has said, I don't want to say that he's making a big point about this. I don't think he is worried too much about this hadith. And I don't think that he even, alayhi rahmatullah, believed that his argument is strong here. Because the vast majority of scholars accepted the statements of Al-Hassan. Who's Hassan, by the way?
Al-Basri.
Why Al-Basri? Is that the most famous Hassan that you know? Why would he not do hadith?
Because to his age and he was...
Doesn't hear anything when he grows up?
No, different area.
No other Sahaba yani living in his town?
I mean, there's certain Sahaba who they were known only by first names. So Abdullah, for example.
That's good. Very good.
Al-Hassan.
That's good. Al-Hassan, whenever you see in hadith Al-Hassan, it always means Al-Hassan al-Basri, the Imam of the Tabi'een. The Imam of the Muhaddithin. So that's the second generation. That means that he met many of Sahaba. There's absolutely no doubt that my guy met with all, like so many Sahaba, but he didn't hear from them all. And actually he probably didn't hear from, or he didn't, when I say hear, meaning he didn't narrate hadith from them. But he met them and he studied with them and so on and so forth. Uthman, of course, and you know, other scholars. So Hassan Basri is Imam, and he's not the only one from the Tabi'in generation that is doing this kind of covering up of things. Al-A'mash, very good. Imam al-Zuhri, for example. Al-Hakim ibn Utaybah, for example. The Imams of Tabi'in, they were doing this tadlis. Okay, it's well known. It's not something which is Qatada, for example, student of Abdullah ibn Abbas, Imam of the Mufassirin. And I want you to know that this is quite common. It's actually very common. And the mursal of these, when we say hadith mursal, we mean that the sahabi is missing. The statement is just quoted straight from the Prophet. This is you said it's different, right? Is it different? When tadlis is happening and you're not mentioning someone, you're justifying in your head, correct? Yeah. Yes?
From what I've heard, I think the Hanafi madhab said there's certain people, if they get missed out, we don't care so much.
That's fine. I mean, in the details, there's huge books on this. But I mean, just saying in general, tadlis is done in different ways for different reasons. So mursal is the same. What is mursal? When you don't say, like I say, the Prophet, like I'm saying mursal all the time. When I'm speaking to you lot, do I say Abdullah ibn Umar said whatever? Oh, I heard. So I don't say that. I say the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said. Now, that's technically speaking, it's a mursal hadith. Well, of course it isn't. The hadith has already been narrated. It's already been written down in books. Everyone knows where it is. So I'm just cutting it out, right? Now, it makes sense. I cutting out the argument. The other way, though, it wouldn't make sense cutting it out because at that time it's not written down. Agreed. But what if I was to say to you that if there's an imam, the tabi'in, who knows 100% that this was said, because he knows everybody saying it, but he didn't actually hear it from the one that was meant to have narrated it. But it's for him like 100% certain knowledge. He's going to tell his people what the Prophet ﷺ said. He's going to miss out the sahabi because he doesn't see any need for it. Because he knows everyone who's listening knows, and he knows the whole field knows, and the like. And so that's one of the reasons why people like Al-Hasan al-Basri do this irsal, just, you know, or call it tadlis, and don't go with them because it was not needed, number one, because it was not required at that time. It was too early. There was not any such a... When did this all start? It started after the tabi'in generation, when the people started lying and fabricating and mistakes started coming in. That's when it started to become serious. And as Muhammad ibn Sirin said, that we never used to say something. We used to say qala, they used to say qala all the time and they never heard. But then situation started to get a bit dodgy, so then we said Samu Jalukum. Then we said name your men. Start now naming your men. Now you're making a statement, tell us who you heard it from. When it started to, you know, and all the lies and all the bid'ah and all the deviances. We're gonna call it there. Because I think you guys got punished enough, frankly. You kept, I've gotta say, of course it's interesting, it is interesting. But I wanna say that even Isa's eyes went, you know, the wobble. Yeah, yeah. Straight, no tadlis, nothing. With my own eyes, I saw it. His eyes looked at yours and thinking. And you can put the ghutra over your eyes as much as you want. They can't see your eyes, but I am looking directly at those eyes.
I have a question. Is tadlis indirectly or directly identified, or both?
Is it directly or indirectly identifiable? Yes. Both.
Directly saying, I did
tadlis
on XYZ, why
doesn't he... Oh, so let me just make it clear. This is never a conversation happening at the time. This is always after passing. This is always in review. This is not a case of going up to a person and saying, why are you not naming their men or whatever.
I know it's happening after the event is happening, but when the person is narrating that hadith, when he's writing...
When you say the person, which person are we talking about?
Whoever is doing tadlis.
Okay, so let's say, for example, here, Al-Hasan al-Basri. Okay, go on. Now take it from there. So Al-Hasan al-Basri, of Samurah ibn Jundub, who is the actual narrator of the hadith.
Okay, so if Hasan al-Basri does tadlis on her.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Him. Yeah, yeah.
If he does tadlis on him.
Yeah.
And he makes it clear in his books that he does tadlis, why doesn't he say why he did tadlis?
So he would never, and he never said, I do tadlis. This is my point. This is something which others are commenting on. This is happening after. For Hassan al-Basri, this is the absolute, yani, no problem, no issue. How dare you even think that there's a problem here, you know? And he's right.
Yeah.
He, for him, this is absolutely normal. He's not doing no crime. Even I can tell you even the word, that's a claim. I don't know whether even the word tadlis existed at his time.
So you're saying that like the concept of using an versus ala, or the codification of the words to describe the chain of the hadith, was not implemented at that time. It came later on because at the time the knowledge was general and the people were highly educated.
Not only that, and I hope everybody heard that, but not only that, but I will go and say to you that in the very early times, the scholars pre codification of rules, pre the science being developed, would use phrases that mean something very different. Qala would be said, and he didn't say it. He means an ana. And then later on, they became very strict and they said qala can only be used when he definitely heard it. So these phrases in the early times, they didn't really have a connotation because people weren't lying. And the generations that were involved, there were only two people in the chain. It was the Prophet ﷺ, it was the companion, and then their student. That's the blessed generation. That's the formative generation. It's too small a gap to have problems. The problems start kicking in when it starts to get to four people, starts to get to five people, starts to get 200 years. We're starting to get distance. We're starting to get spread. We're starting to get dodgy ideas. We're starting to get agendas. We're starting to get politics. That's when you start to now have to go back and redefine all of the words. So for example, this applies in hadith, it applies in fiqh. It applies with words like wajib. We're even discussing this point now. Does wajib actually mean wajib? Do you know what I mean? So sometimes a word can obviously mean something, but then you've got to look at it in a different light. So for example, when people debate all the time, when Imam Ahmed would say a hadith is da'if, for example, does he actually mean a hadith is da'if? Or does he mean that it's a hadith not authentic, sahih, and it meant hasan? Because today we've got three. Well, I say today. In the early days, right, they when they started to codify, they had three. That it's either authentic, it's either good, or it's either weak. But then the more that people start messing around with it, and the more that people start to go distant from knowledge, like, you know, time goes on, you need more books to explain the simple part. So then they said Hassan li ghayrihi and this and Sahih li ghayrihi and this is Ya'ani Munkar and this is Mawdu. In the early days there were not all these phrases, but then it needed to start to kind of explain something in a bit more detail.
Didn't Imam Tirmidhi have his way to
code? Yeah, exactly. They all had their own different ways, words that all people understand. Yeah, words which people all mean, understand one way, but he means it a different way. And that's part of the science as well. Yeah. Okay, let's just take a couple of online ones. Rabia, we're not even going back to, we are not even there yet. Leave that, inshallah. Anam got the answer right, excellent. Surat al-Kahf, yani, should be on Friday, correct, not after Maghrib on Thursday, I agreed. And just we'll take these two questions. There's a Hanafi opinion that whenever one enters the Haram Makki from outside the city, crossing Miqat, they have to enter Ihram, even if they don't. There's a Hanafi opinion that whenever one enters the Haram Makka from outside the Haram Makka, from outside the city, crossing the Miqat. Man, I don't understand this point. That's two separate things. They have to enter Ihram even if they don't intend Umrah. Are there other opinions? I'm not too sure what you mean, but if you mean, because obviously the Haram is just a couple of miles and the Miqat is miles away. Oh, I think I understand. Actually, I think she's actually put the question very accurately. I think what she's saying is that basically what you did. Basically what Danish did. Can you imagine someone crossing the Miqat of Jeddah, okay,
to go to
the Haram Mecca,
yeah,
and do absolutely nothing, have a kebab, and then go back to Jeddah. Have a karain, even worse. Have a karain. Imagine coming into the Haram and say Umrah wa Umrah. Haram wa Haram. Masjid, what masjid? And go back on the same day. On the same day! Can you imagine anyone do that? Full intentional, planned it, programmed it, full plan, program, everything. Right? And Fizzah is saying the Hanafis are telling you that you've got to do Umrah. You had to enter Ihram. Don't enter Umrah. Are there other opinions on this? Fizzah, clearly Danish believes there are other opinions on this. Okay, I hope that answers your question. Danish, yani, I trust in my deen 100%. D-nice. Absolutely.
That's too much trust, bro.
It's the other way around. Listen, Danish. Okay? 100% there are different opinions on that. No, it's not obligatory to do Umrah in the first place. And it is permissible. And I don't believe there's any evidence to do that. Whoever does ghusl, then comes to Jum'ah and prays and listens. This is hadith. That's coming, inshallah. Said that's coming. Is tahiyyatul masjid prayed only in the masjid? Or can it be prayed wherever a congregational prayer is held? No, the Tahiyyatul Masjid is specific to the masjid. All right, guys, we'll call that. Jazakumullah khair. Next week, same time, 8:10. And, oh yeah, wait, we have the LP tradition. If you guys don't know, the LP tradition is just getting fat by eating sweets, okay? Even though we make claim that obviously we don't, we have, yani, mashallah, the tradition maintained, alhamdulillah. Folks, Jazakumullah khair online. We are back to normal time like this time. 8:10 p.m. UK time, and back inside in Cheadle for the foreseeable future, inshallah, for the next, hopefully, a whole load of weeks. And for the rest of you online, 8:10 p.m. UK time. Jazakumullah khair, wa barakallahu feekum, subhanakallahumma bihamdik. Ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta wa astaghfirukallahumma wa atubu ilaik. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.